Okay, I'm just going to give a brief review this morning of some work I've been doing in collaboration with Leo Bruin in Australia, Warner Miller in Los Alamos. I've worked with Daniel Holtz a bit on some of this. On Reggie Geometrodynamics, I just want to talk about what Reggie Calculus is, why we might want to use it, and show you that it's an interesting and alternative technique to the standard approaches in numerical relativity. Normally, one would go and do a finite difference discretization of the Einstein equations and solve that on a computer. This is an alternative approach. The equations themselves are inherently discrete. We replace the smooth manifold with a lattice of simplicial blocks. Each four-dimensional block is itself intrinsically flat. All of the curvature resides on the two-dimensional triangles in the lattice. In general, in n dimensions, it resides in codimension 2. So in four-dimensional gravity, you find all of the curvature living on the triangular hinges between tetrahedral faces of the four-dimensional blocks. So in two dimensions, you can view this as a conical singularity. You've just got the curvature concentrated at the point. If you have parallel vectors, if they pass around that conical point, you'll get some geodesic deviation. You can measure that by cutting the cone, working out the angle that you get when you flatten it out. That's called the deficit angle. It's proportional to the Gaussian curvature and some area dual to that point. So if you actually parallel transport it around the conical point, that A star would be the area enclosed in the path. So that's a usual definition of parallel transport. Excuse me. Edges are the fundamental quantities. They take the place of the metric. They carry the measurement of length in the lattice, and they define uniquely within each four-dimensional block a flat metric. From this structure, we can build an action, which you can see arising from the standard Hilbert action. The scalar curvature is just the deficit angle per unit area. This A star is the area joule to the triangle. The volume is just the area of the triangle times the joule area. There's numerical factors here. It all cancels out. The joule areas cancel, and you just get that as the action. You vary that action with respect to the edges, and you get the Reggie equations, which are the lattice equivalent of the Einstein equations. It's interesting to note here that there's some interesting structure happening in the background almost, which doesn't appear in the action, but it seems fundamental to the theory. And that's the Voronoi, or at least the joule lattice, which is important when it comes to incorporating things like matter, because then you have to start looking at the joule areas to calculate the volume, the densities of matter, and this kind of thing. So I just want to talk about some examples of this. As we saw in the previous talk, the usual approach is to introduce symmetry. If you want to simplify your problem, introduce some sort of symmetry. This doesn't work very well on a lattice because a lattice is a fundamentally four-dimensional structure. So to build a symmetric lattice to do spherical symmetry is actually a fairly large amount of work. So I've started with a block that looks like this, the three-dimensional block. It's just a cubic grid aligned with the coordinates subdivided into six tetrahedra. To get a spherically symmetric approximation, we actually introduce these edges here, call them r delta phi. Oh, that edge is r delta phi. This edge would be r sine theta delta theta. Just coordinate increments. And then we take the limit as we reduce those delta theta delta phi, reduce these edges and those edges down to zero. And what you're left with is just that direction. So this is a way, an approach to get a purely one-dimensional solution from Reggie Calculus. It takes a bit of work. You've got to write out the full four-dimensional structure, calculate all of the deficit angles and the equations, and then take that limit. I've done that using Mathematica. It's not something you can do on a piece of paper. It's actually quite quite a complicated set of algebraic equations. But it does yield a spherically symmetric lattice. And here's some results from numerical simulations. Obviously, this isn't terribly interesting. This is a standard evolution of a Schwarzschild black hole in isotropic coordinates. We've used area locking, which means effectively that the radial coordinate doesn't evolve. And we get something that's in agreement with standard numerical techniques. We start off with, this is the change in the lattice edge lengths as we evolve in time. It's a static solution. We don't expect them to change. There's initially some small variations, and then they settle down into a perfectly static solution. Here are the constraint equations. They're small, and they stay small. This is only with 50 grid points, so the constraints are still quite large. This is possibly not very interesting in itself. The reason we're doing this is, firstly, as a test of regiocalculus itself. We've still got sort of a barrier to tunnel through before people are going to believe that this is a useful technique for numerical relativity. And we've also wished to develop a formalism to include matter in regiocalculus. And so a one-dimensional test case, a test bed is useful. We can do things like Oppenheimer, Snyder dust collapse to test our matter formalism. Okay, so now I'd like to show you some axisymmetric solutions. These are slightly more interesting. Again, we use the same approach. We take advantage of the fact that at a moment of time symmetry, the continuum equations reduce to the three curvature vanishing. The Regi equations take this form. It just says that the average curvature at a point is zero, at a vertex is zero. We use the same lattice as before, but we only shrink one axis, and we get an axisymmetric. We get an axisymmetric approximation. So I've got a few examples of this, which I will run through very quickly. The first one is Brill waves, another standard test problem people use in numerical relativity to validate their code, to validate their techniques. So this is just a spherically symmetric, time-symmetric, axisymmetric solution. This function Q has to be specified. It's subject to some boundary conditions. Here are two commonly used choices for Q. And here's an idea of how we treat the edge lengths. There's a conformal decomposition happening here, just like you would use in the continuum to solve an initial value problem. There's no other variables because it's purely time symmetric. So we introduce this conformal factor at each vertex and solve for it at each vertex. Show you some of those solutions. The top pictures are there because they're pretty. The main point is probably this one. It shows convergence to the continuum solution. So this is a second order method. It differs from the continuum solution, second order. The continuum solution I've used here was itself second order. So it is equivalent to more standard finite difference techniques. Physics extracted from that. These are the apparent horizons around that Brill wave. When you get, these are really high amplitude Brill waves close to the critical, well, above the critical value where horizons form. The continuum and Regi calculations are shown on these graphs as the inner and outer. So this is, which one? That one's the apparent horizon. Probably the details here aren't that important. This shows, as a function of the Brill wave amplitude, the formation of the horizons. So you see you get the two trapped surfaces forming, and there's a critical value, 11 point something, at which the horizons first appear. And this is in agreement with continuum. And again, the solution is found to converge back to the, or found to converge to the continuum solutions. So I guess the take-home message from that, and most of these examples, is that regiocalculus is an accurate and useful technique. Here's another example. Brill waves on a black hole background, so-called distorted black holes. The metric is very similar to before, so we have a black hole structure. We cut out a hole at the center of the grid. The lattice is now aligned with spherically symmetric coordinate system, which very easily allows you to generate a lattice. So in the spherically symmetric or in the spherical coordinates, you take a spherical cylindrical coordinates, you take a regular lattice, which then generates a appropriate lattice for the topology. That's next graph is a solution. It reads through this. Again, convergence, second order to the continuum, which is the main point. Another axisymmetric initial data example. This is the Misner solution for the head-on collision of two equal mass non-rotating black holes. This is standard approach one uses in the continuum. Write down the conformal factor in this form. There's a useful coordinate transformation. The advantage of the coordinate transformation is that it gives you the structure. This is reflection symmetric around the z equals zero line, so there's a hole here, there's a hole down there. Again, your rotation around the other axis. This coordinate system was actually a major problem for the standard numerical approaches, because although we take a regular grid in this coordinate system, you can see there's a coordinate problem down at the pole of the axis down there, and it caused finite difference codes to diverge horribly. The advantage of regiocalculus is we use this coordinate system to generate this structure, which we then use to generate the edge lens, and we throw away the coordinate system. So the coordinate singularities can never cause a problem for us, because all we have is this finite edge length and that finite edge length and that finite. There's no singularity. So we can evolve this freely from now on without running into any of the singularity problems of the continuum approach. When they write their equations out, they still have singular terms in the evolution equations in those coordinates. Of course, I'm going to suffer a loss of resolution here due to the coordinate singularity, but I can come in and refine that area and put in finer triangles if I need to. No time left. Okay, that is mostly what I want to say. Let me skip straight to the conclusion, which is that I've just shown you a collection of examples where we've used regiocalculus in standard numerical relativity problems. We've found good convergence to the solutions. We've found agreement in physical parameters. And so I'd claim that regiocalculus is an interesting and different technique with which to model classical relativistic systems. Thank you.
Question for Adrian?
Could be talking nonsense, but I think that in some cases for post-Newtonian approximations, possibly in cosmology, it was pointed out by Milboing that the error analysis for logical calculus does not behave as you would expect in the continuum limit.
Yes.
So why does that happen there and doesn't happen in your analysis?
His analysis was exactly the same as here. It wasn't post-Newtonian, it was full. He was my advisor. His results are right. We actually published a paper recently together where we explained the problem. I mean, it wasn't that the solutions weren't converging. It was, if you know anything about finite element methods, you'd never examine an individual finite element equation and expect it to converge to the continuum. And this is what he was doing. They only converge on average. They only converge when you build your finite element equations up and build your final high-level system. So he was, in a sense, he was asking the wrong question. So, I think he would now agree that we expect the solutions to converge, and if you look at the right combinations of equations, they converge too. And it only makes sense to solve these equations in a lump together. And in that sense, they're convergent.
In evolving torsion, for example, what do you do about the singularity?
We do the same thing that the numerical relativity people do. We you have the same freedom. So, fix the lattice there. Fix a two sphere, a fixed size. Say, it's excise the interior. Yeah. So I've just.
Another question.
Yep. Sure.
I mean, do you foresee that this will become a more efficient way of calculating
No, I'd I'm not going to claim that. Yes, no. But I think it's as competitive, and I think it's different. So it may be useful and more competitive on some things. So it just complements the other techniques. I don't think we're going to throw any of them away. Or I hope we're not.
So what's your time scale for moving, for actually having done the axisymmetric black hole collisions? That would be a situation where we could start to get some real feeling for how this compares.
I'd like to say the South African conference, but I think that's probably a bit much. I mean, it's just me working on this, largely. So it's difficult to compare to the Potsdam group who, you know, have a...
And one other question. Adaptive mesh refinement is really quite necessary to make the other techniques succeed, and I presume it will be necessary here. What is the status of adaptive mesh refinement in Reggie County?
I don't think anyone's ever really looked at it in detail. In a sense, you get some natural mesh refinement because you can, you know, the lattice is, you don't have the coordinates drifting around, you've actually got the physical lattice, which is the physics itself. So there's some natural refinement. I'm not going to claim too much. Obviously, you want to subdivide more, but no, there's been no real work on that.
There is, I think there's a group of Los Alamos that has been doing, for other problems, they've been doing lattice refinement.
Sure.
So there is...
We can feed off, yeah.
That has in the context of finite elements?
Yes.
Physically, it could actually be easier to use a
simplex,
you know,
Geometry
was simplified
to that before, especially
based on the inside.
It's presumably just an issue of doing the implementation.
Right. Yep.
Okay. That's fine. Here we go.